continuing interview with Dr. Eaton, Friday, May 22nd. I recall Dr. Eaton that after the war years, you took your PhD at Columbia. And what year was that?
Well, I finished in 1947.
And what was the major?
The major was sociology.
I see. You mentioned in your vita also that you attended the Chicago School of Social Service Administration.
Right. In 1940, when I graduated from Cornell University, I decided that sociology was too academic and not sufficiently applied. And I thought social work was. And so I applied to the School of Social Service Administration and received a scholarship there. But I also had to work. But this study was interrupted by the fact that I got a job that enabled me to do a fundamental research study of cooperative farming in the United States. And so I left the university to move to New York, where I had to establish an office to conduct the study, organize field work, and I took a few courses at Columbia University while I was doing this at night. This is how I then interrupted my social work education, because it was more interesting to me to have a chance to study how cooperative farms were working, because the United States government was conducting 27 experimental farms using the cooperative pattern, very much like a moshav in Israel.
I see.
And the U.S. Department of Agriculture was very interested in this, so that seemed to be more exciting than just going to school.
I'm sure it was.
Yes.
Before we go on to your outstanding professional career following the academic years, we'd like to digress just long enough to deal with your personal life, marriage, and family. Where did you and your wife meet, and when were you married?
Well, we met when I was in New York City. And since I took some courses at Columbia University, I became aware of the fact that psychiatrists had very special ideas about why people were functioning well or not so well. And I heard of a psychiatrist named Moreno, Dr. Moreno was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud, younger than Freud, who came to the United States, a Sephardic Jew, very proud of his ancestry, and an unusual egomaniac. And he had a theory that you could understand people best by letting them act out their feelings with some actors while the psychiatrist would observe, and thereby he would understand them, and so would the patient understand himself better.
Is this similar to role-playing?
Yes.
I see.
He regards himself as the founder of role-playing, of psychodrama, of social drama. He wrote books on the subject, and so every Friday night he would have sessions in his studio on 101 Park Avenue, where he made demonstrations of his method, and I decided to go to one of these demonstrations with a colleague of mine. One of his assistants, who was hired for the summer to act out roles with people, was my future wife.
I see.
And because I sat in the first row, Dr. Moreno asked me if I would volunteer. And since I'd never seen the method, I said yes. And as the Bala was up there, the first thing I did was to ask him questions about his method and how did he ever think of psychodrama, and he became so involved in these questions that we spent about over an hour in which he explained how he developed psychodrama, that he liked playing God when he was a small child, and how one day he climbed on a chair and then decided God was really much higher, so he put a lot of chairs on top of each other until he climbed on top and all the chairs fell, but fortunately he didn't get hurt. But he said, I've never gotten over the God complex. And then something suddenly hit him that he was really being the subject and he was to demonstrate his methodology. So he said, would you mind interrupting? That isn't really what you came here for. And so he asked me if I would be willing to participate in a psychodrama and called up his assistant up the stage. I guess he was a bit embarrassed and said, well, Helen, did you have a dream recently? And so my wife said, yes. She says, why don't you act out a dream? Who was in the dream? And she said, I forgot whether it was her father or anyhow, some male. And she talked about this dream of studying and getting disgusted and throwing books at this person. And so I was up there playing the role of the other, supposedly. And she actually threw some books at me. Mm-hmm. And anyhow, we can honestly say we met at the office of a psychiatrist.
Well, it had a happy ending. What is your wife's background? Was she in psychology then?
My wife is a drama major.
I see.
Who attended Carnegie Mellon University.
I see.
When it was called Carnegie University. And, undoubtedly, her marriage ruined an acting career.
You have children, Dr. Eden?
Four.
I see. Before we go on to that, what is your wife's maiden name?
Goodman.
I see. All right, we'll return to your children and your their lives later on, but we want now to turn to your early years in this city. Mm-hmm. Or where were you living in the early years of your marriage?
Well, we got married in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And since I had just graduated from Columbia, I had to find a job. There were two jobs offered to me. One was at Penn State University, and the other was at Wayne State University in Detroit. Penn State withdrew the offer, and I learned later because I was Jewish. There was too much disagreement in the faculty about the idea of hiring a Jew. And Wayne University was in the city of Detroit, and this is the position I accepted. So we lived in Detroit.
And what year did you come to Pittsburgh?
Well, I came to Pittsburgh in 1960.
I see.
That was in 1948, in other words.
And you were married in 1948?
Yes.
I see. Your family life with your children, was religion a factor?
Well, we send our children to Hebrew school. Mm-hmm. And we went to synagogue periodically. I'm not really religious, but I felt my children should have the opportunity to have that exposure.
Boys?
Three boys and one girl.
Were they bar mitzvah?
Oh, yes.
I see. Did you live in Detroit until you came to Pittsburgh?
I lived in Detroit for a few years and then accepted a temporary position to do a study in Cleveland, and then took a position in Los Angeles and then came here.
I see. Well, in those early years, were there family projects, hobbies, as a family group, any particular activity that...
Well, when you have four children, when it comes to hobbies, there's really no time. And since as a young professor, I had many things to do because I was very quickly active in research, plus teaching. When our first child was born, 2 years old, we spent a good part of the year in Montana and South Dakota and Northern Canada because I was studying the Hutterites.
Yes, it's a beautiful country.
It's a very interesting country. Well, South Dakota is not, but Montana, yes.
The Hutterites.
Hutterites. It's a religious group that comes from Switzerland originally, and my interest in them is the fact that they live communally. They have cooperative farms, and I got acquainted with them when I did my doctoral thesis, and it was published, so people became interested in it. One of the features of these people is the fact that none of them were in mental hospitals. And at the end of World War II, when we had so many soldiers discharged, the armed forces were very much concerned about mental illness and what could be done to prevent, to treat mental illnesses. And here was a group of people who, for all evidence that is available, none of them were known to be in a mental hospital. So I wrote to Washington, and they gave me a very sizable grant to study, basically, what's wrong with the Hutterites? Why don't they go crazy?
Why don't they get sick?
Like the rest of us. And so I took time off from teaching and organized a team of a psychiatrist and psychologist and myself. And we visited the villages of these people and interviewed people and made medical examinations and so on to find out.
And what was the conclusion?
The conclusion was that their way of life certainly reduces
stress.
Pressure and stress. They probably have about half the frequency of breakdown than their neighbors. But they handle patients within the community because they regard hospitals as just not a place to send their members. They will send them to a physician to examination for temporary care, but if they are chronically ill, because they're communal, they can always assign somebody for the family to look after this patient.
But then their statistics would be valid because they don't send these people out of the community.
Right. Well, we made those corrections. In other words, we made a comparison of persons who were known to be mentally ill by the criteria of our medical psychiatrist and psychologists and compared them to evidence of a similar nature. So. But that's the most important part of the study that became ultimately more famous than even the psychiatric report, was the finding that this is the most fertile group that has ever existed. The average woman has 12 live babies.
Hmm.
And so they double in number every 16 years.
Very prolific.
Yes, they believe that the only way to get to heaven is to birth control is murder, and so they. We made a study of the biology, the social biology of large family size and the impact it had on.
Return to your family. You say you didn't have time for hobbies. Did you do the patients together or camping together?
Yes, camping.
I see.
It was necessary both because kids liked it, but also for economic reasons.
Sure.
It would have been too expensive to go on vacations to resorts.
Six of you.
That's right.
Dr. Eaton, we would like next to discuss your rich and varied professional career. According to your vita, you're presently a professor at the University of Pittsburgh. Did you have earlier teaching assignments prior to Pitt?
Yes, at Wayne University.
Yes.
And then at Western Reserve University, where I was a professor to work with the School of Social Work on changing their curriculum, modernizing their curriculum. And then the same in California, I taught.
And what year did you come to Pitt?
In 1960.
I see.
What University of California?
University of California at Los Angeles.
What brought you to Pittsburgh?
The chancellor of the university, Litchfield, at that time, was in the process of trying to upgrade a regional school into what he hoped would be an internationally well-known school. And so the dean of the School of Social Work was able to recruit nationally to bring in what he then regarded were stars. Mm-hmm. I was hired under very good conditions, salary and fringe conditions, to motivate me to come here, because the opportunity for creative development seemed very great to me. They were.
In what department are you currently a professor?
I'm now a professor in the School of Public and International Affairs.
What disciplines does public and international affairs encompass?
Well, I'm a sociologist with a good deal of background in social work. We have people in political science, a good many economists, some urban ecologists, people in financial management and personnel administration. In other words, as a professional school, its faculty has diverse backgrounds.
You wear many hats, Dr. Eaton. I note that you were director of the Economic and Social Development Program. Specifically, what does that involve?
That's a very recent appointment.
I see.
That is a program that trains officials interested in the planning and management of development projects. Domestically, many counties, most cities, all states have development authorities that try to bring business into a community, that try to expand employment, that make proposals for the federal government or the state government to invest to improve either the environment or employment conditions. Perhaps most of our students, however, come from overseas, because they are...
You say most of them come from overseas?
Overseas, yes.
I see.
And so many of our students come from countries where, when they go back home, will be responsible for development projects in the Ministry of Planning, the Ministry of Finance, the Ministries of Development, Agriculture, and so on.
Also, I note that you're an organizer and coordinator of the dual degree program at the Graduate School of Social Work. How does public and international affairs specifically relate to social work?
Well, we are a school that combines international studies, mm-hmm. diplomacy, security studies, with public administration, which is more domestic in its orientation. And administrators administer water systems, they administer tax bureaus, tax collection systems, they certainly administer welfare systems. And so social workers interested in administration come to our school to take a dual degree. There are relatively few persons in public administration who decide to study social work in order to have more understanding of the substance of social work. And when I came to the school, I organized this dual degree program because I had good relationships with the School of Social Work, having been on their faculty.
You also list joint appointments in the Department of Sociology and the School of Public Health.
Mm-hmm.
Are you currently involved in both of these schools?
Well, the sociology department has always kept me on its rolls. Some of my courses are listed in their program, so sociologists come to my courses. And I serve on committees, doctoral committees. Once I was actually temporarily for a year the administrative director of the school of the department when they didn't have a chairperson and there were internal problems, so they wanted an outsider in effect. That was very temporary. So that basically it means that the courses I teach include sociologists. In the School of Public Health, it's much the same. They send people to my courses. The reason I have a joint appointment there is because for a few years I was in the School of Public Health when they had a big research project that needed a director because the other director had died. It was a study of Medicare and Medicaid. And so we also have joint programs so that students from their school come to our program and vice versa.
Your visa lists your present functions as teaching graduate courses in these areas, methods of research in any particular field?
Well, methods of research, very much like mathematics, don't vary very much by fields.
You mean the technique applies overall?
The techniques. Now, you stress different methods depending on the area in which you do research, so that you have research courses in just about every different discipline, but the methodologies used overlap a great deal.
Another area was program evaluation. Mm-hmm. What field was that?
Well, I've done a good deal of research in program evaluation. For example, the prison system of California, of the impact and the effectiveness of their prison reform program, and so on. And courses that teach students how to evaluate public programs, how to relate what actually happens to the goals that the program has. It's really an application of research methods.
The VITA lists comparative social welfare policies. Does that relate to the past or the present? Or both?
Both.
I see.
In other words, what are the differences in the administration and the policies of welfare systems in the United States, both in the past and present, comparing it to what happens in England, Scandinavia, the communist countries, and third world countries.
Administrative reform. What type of administration are you referring to there?
Well,
agencies?
Most of the time, public agencies, when they're criticized, either say they are engaged in or already have recently completed administrative reforms. It's another way of saying making changes.
I see.
And how one goes about and how one evaluates administrative reforms is an important topic for people who go into public administration.
Well, do these areas pretty much cover your teaching at the graduate level? I see. Dr. Eaton, your visa then specifies, and I quote, prior functions. We'll attempt to review some of these in chronological order if we can. On leave of absence from Pitt, 1953 to 56, you were instructor to associate professor in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at Wayne State University. You referred to that.
Mm-hmm.
This was a Russell Sage Foundation project.
No. Then, subsequent to that, I I went to Cleveland and I was the same from this project.
That was at Western Reserve?
Western Reserve University, to work with the faculty on changing their curriculum.
At Western Reserve, you worked in consultation with the medical school on their social science content.
You see, the medical school at that time was nationally very prominent because it had decided to undertake a major reorganization of the curriculum of the medical school. And one of its changes was that physicians should be exposed to working with families and understanding the social and psychological background of families.
I would agree. But there doesn't seem to be time for this today.
So they set up an internship program in which faculty members of the School of Social Work would work with physicians and assign them families, and then work with the families as advisors for all health problems when they were sick, see that they get to the right doctor and go with them and find out. In other words, this was for the first and second year medical students who had one family to go after, always a family in which there was a pregnant woman. So they would learn some of the more problems of the normal young family. And they asked me to come over to evaluate that program. But once I got there and they saw how I thought and how I worked, I became involved in looking at their total curriculum.
I see. Well, this approach was an innovation, I gather.
At that time, it was quite an innovation. Most medical schools required a year of, for example, of anatomy and dissection. And that has been abandoned in medical schools as not being really sufficiently productive. Because except for surgeons, you really don't need that experience, and it's very expensive and time-consuming. So within the medical schools all over the world, there's competition between the different disciplines for time. And the idea of giving as much time to the social aspects of medicine was very controversial. Psychiatry got more time in the medical school. So I was one of the outside evaluators discussing the evidence they were bringing in.
Well, then, social science content in medical schools today, is that current or not?
Yes. I would say it is much less controversial. on the other hand, more and more students arrive today with a good deal of understanding because of changes in the training of a great many of the applicants. They are no longer just studying biology and chemistry and bacteriology. They also are encouraged by medical schools to get some social science training.
According to your vita, you were a member of the team to reorganize the doctoral program in social work at the university. That was between 1966 and 69. Mm-hmm. Following this, you became director of a comprehensive study of medical services to the poor, namely Medicaid and Medicare. This involved a contract between the Graduate School of Public Health and the U.S. Public Health Service. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
What were the implications of this study?
Oh, that is an interesting and typical American story. When President Johnson suddenly found himself to be president, you may recall he decided that he would undertake a war against poverty and end poverty once and for all. And there was a great deal of criticism of both the Medicare and the Medicaid program in terms of its expense, its administrative complexity, and the fact that it wasn't really doing enough. And so a contract was let and Pittsburgh got half of the contract. Pittsburgh and the University of Michigan together administered a contract of over $1 million to study these programs. I was involved in planning the proposal, but I did not like the proposal we submitted, so I did not participate in it. I had other things to do. And the person who was in charge died suddenly. And so they were afraid the money and the research program would be transferred to Michigan. And asked the dean of my school and me if I would be willing to go to their school, accept an appointment, just shift appointments to run this program. Since they needed someone who had a reputation in that field. And since we just were recruiting a new dean who was very incompetent, I was very glad to do that, because I felt the leadership of the School of Social Work was just inadequate. And since I was very active there, I knew he and I wouldn't work together very well.
So this was at Michigan?
No, it was here at Pitt.
Oh, it was here, I see.
So I moved from the School of Social Work to the School of Public Health. It simply meant that moving from the cathedral, 22nd floor, to the School of Public Health.
I see.
And to direct the study there. But the sad thing was,